This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Siobhan Leydon and welcome to Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast, where we spoke about raising awareness about the inclusion of people of determination in sports with Holly Murphy of Heroes of Hope. We also spoke to author Ebtissam Albaiti about her new book. We had the latest updates also from Donata.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. Now let's introduce our first guest today. It's an absolute pleasure to be chatting with Holly Murphy, founder of Heroes for Hope. She is an absolute force of nature. She's running 7 marathons in 7 days across 7 Emirates to raise awareness for about inclusion for people of determination into sports. She's currently on day 5 and she's in Ajman. And by the end of the week, she will have covered a grueling 294 kilometres. Holly, great to have you joining us today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. Thank you so much for having me.
You sound full of energy. I mean, I cannot imagine. So you've already ran 4 marathons. Today is your 5th.
Actually, today was number five. We got to the 5th one today. Yeah.
So are you in the middle of it now? Where are you? Whereabouts are you?
Yeah. So we're on our way now to Sharjah. That's our next Emirate for the marathon number 6.
Right. Okay. Now, this is absolutely, I mean, I must admit, I bumped into a colleague here at Dubai, Brandy Scott, this morning, and she was just so overwhelmed, like just so wonderful words to say about you. I believe she did the Hatter event you had a short while back, and she just said you are absolutely incredible. So I was so excited to talk to you today. And just to talk about Heroes of Hope and really what are your expectations after, you know, for running these 7 marathons in 7 Emirates?
So we're doing the 7 Emirates and we're doing the 7 marathons over the next couple of days. And as you already said, it's just to raise the awareness and much needed donations for Heroes of Hope and the Adjadi Left Foundation. So Heroes of Hope, we are an outreach initiative and we support a community of children with all additional needs, like physical and cognitive disabilities, but also adults as well. So we actually have developed like different styles of sports, health and fitness programs for them to get involved with, not just obviously to be like an elite sports person, but obviously as well just for friendships and also for the families as well to have additional support and people, you know, who understand, you know, their lifestyle, you know, some of the things perhaps they're going through. It's just been really nice to build a community out here that really supports each other. So by doing the 7 marathons, I feel like it's a great way to raise, obviously, the awareness for Heroes of Hope. But it's something that we'd like to obviously expand throughout all the Emirates and a place, I know, a community for everyone to have, not just here in Dubai.
So you started, it's a non-profit group, isn't it? It was founded back in 2013. What prompted you to start it in the first place, Holly?
Oh, sorry. That question I'm always asked. It's been really hard one to answer. Do you know what? I just feel like I have a passion for working with children with additional needs. I'm a school teacher by trade, but I recently resigned from teaching to focus full time on the organization. It's just because honestly, throughout my lifetime, when I've been around people or children with special needs, I really have enjoyed either working with them or coaching them. And it's something that I've always followed through on, even when went on into teaching. I loved having the kids in my class, you know, who needed that extra bit of help. I think it's very rewarding. And I do believe by giving these children a platform and opportunity, they can actually really prove to everybody how amazing they truly are. Mm. And just by providing them that support system. And also sometimes, rather than making them fit into our world, it's up to us to go into their world. And that's where you can get the best out of them.
And how can coaches listening, you know, if you're listening now and coach says, you know, this is something I want to do, how can they get involved? Are there ways and means for them to also be trained? Or do they need special training? Or what can they do?
To be honest, it's not something that we actually seek out, to be honest, specialised side of it. Because that's one thing we actually are trying to break the barriers for. It's not all about having, like, you know, a specific skill set. We want to try and bring, like, obviously mainstream and session world together. We want to merge it, you know, and to be around people with determination, you don't always have to be, you know, trained in that specific area. Obviously, you know, if you do have that training, obviously it helps, of course. But also just to having the kids, having people who are committed to the programs, who's going to support them the right way, who's going to show them a lot of love, you know, just in general, who's going to encourage them to do their very best. And just being a very good heart and just being around for those kids. I think for us, that's the most important thing. Like, commitment really is kind of something that we really seek from people, is you're truly committed to the programs and to the kids that you're going to be around. So I think that's very, very important, because the kids do build up a very nice relationship with us, and we become a very integrated part of their lives. And, you know, we're part of their routine, we're part of their day-to-day programs. So it's very important, you know, even though we are volunteer coaches, that we do obviously donate that time and we make sure that we're there for them.
Yeah. Now, as I said, you wanted to highlight the issues of inclusion, but currently, as it stands, are you seeing that there is exclusion right now and in schools or whatever? And how can what you're doing help to highlight that and you know, let people see, well, you know, you don't have to have things separate, as you mentioned. You can actually all include the kids together.
I think that's something. I think that's still, obviously, there's a lot of debate around that at the moment. You know, there's definitely, especially in the UAE here, there's some fantastic groups out here that really are promoting inclusion and driving it, and it's been fantastic. And I think in general, the UAE have become very progressive around this, and they are definitely putting, you know, wheels in motion in action. And, you know, more than ever before now, people with of determination, they do have a lot more opportunities, I think, than ever before. And it's been absolutely wonderful to see that happening. But by having communities like Here is a Hope, it does increase awareness, even increases education. Because it's not even about, like, the children at the moment in schools. They do learn about people with additional needs. They might even have a classmate with additional needs, and they're learning. It's actually our generations, perhaps even generations before me, they were actually the ones who weren't ever really exposed to people with additional needs. So, you know, even for them, they're still not quite sure, oh, what do I do, or who are they, or, you know. So it's always been that little bit of stigma has always been there. And as a result, that stigma has definitely bridged a barrier and gap between people with special needs and I think the mainstream world. So it's something that desperately we're trying to remove the barriers and just have everybody is basically on a platform of equality. And like I said before, if you just provide the right support system, you know, opportunity and a platform for these people, or for people of determination, you know, they truly are exceptional. And as you said before, like, Brandy Scott did come on the HATA challenge with us, where we watched 11 of our athletes compete in a mainstream event where they cycled 11 kilometers or 13 kilometers through the mountains. They ran, you know, 3 kilometers on a mountain trail, and then they decided to, they went kayaking as well. That's all part of their race. And they were just mixed in with all the mainstream athletes as well. You know, they didn't make any exception for our athletes. And you know what? They went ahead and they did it, and they were supported by the coaches, you know, who believed in them and knew that they could do it. And that's exactly what happened on the day. Even though it took them, you know, a couple of hours out in the course, they did do it. You know, they're absolutely fantastic, and they show grit and determination and, you know, a strong sense of belief in themselves, and they went ahead and they achieved it. There's no reason why we can't, you know, do this for people of determination, because when we do it, you know, we see, you know, their true colours come through.
Yeah.
And they really are fantastic.
You're absolutely right. That was the one thing that she did say, was that it was incredible, because the children or the adults of determination were not given special treatment. They weren't given, you know, extra attention in that area. Everyone was together. Everyone was helping each other out together. You know, so it was very, very much, you know, in capitals, inclusion and not exclusion of those that maybe were struggling. And so that was just really incredible. And we've just had some really lovely messages come through for you. Let me just read them out. Miss Murphy, we love you and miss you. Well done once again. That's lots of love from Imara and Mum. Oh,
yeah.
And Kathy's just messaged saying, hi, Holly is a true... is a true woman of substance. Indeed you are. I just want to talk a little bit also now about the marathons, which you just seem like, yeah, I'm just running these marathons, it's fine.
Kind of,
honestly,
yeah.
How are you feeling, really? How are you feeling?
Do you know what? Surprisingly, I'm doing actually really well. It wasn't something I was training for, and that's why I think I was...
Well, you haven't
everybody.
Even trained for them.
I wasn't really training for them, but to be honest, like... you know, because I'm working like pretty much 12 hours with our athletes from Here as a Hope with the Kids of Determination, like I'm running after them all day, every day from like 8 a.m. to sometimes 9 o'clock at night. So I'm on my feet quite a bit, to be honest. But also, like, to be honest, being around the kids and the families, like, they are a true inspiration and they give you such purpose. So by doing something like this and being in a position where I can actually move my own two legs and do something where I can raise proper awareness and education around this area, I think this is one of the best things I can do for our community. You know, I think leaders have to lead sometimes, and you have to put one foot in the other and kind of pave the way for everybody else, you know.
Walk the talk, as they say.
I think there's only so much talking you can do, and sometimes you have to action a couple of these things, you know. And to be honest, I've been kind of blown away and a bit overwhelmed by the amount of support we have received across the Emirates. So many people have shown up, like to run with us and to raise the flag for inclusion and to support the types of communities that we do support. And it's been phenomenal, really, to have that amount of support from people come out, particularly because we do start very early in the morning, like 5 a.m. we start the run, and off I go. And then there's different moments where people are jumping on, you know, at different stages of the marathon to run a couple of kilometres. But it's been really fantastic to have people across every Emirate show up and, you know, be there and support it and, you know, truly believe in what we're trying to do and believe in that purpose. So it has actually has been really overwhelming, to be honest. But it's been great because it's put in a position to raise awareness beyond Dubai and, you know, into the other Emirates as well.
I'd like to, you said that you've had some people joining you and people can sort of run alongside you. Is that really helping you kind of get through it? How can our listeners, if they'd like to, how can they come and help you and sort of spur you on these last few days of these marathons that you're running?
That's exactly it, I suppose. It's just like we do have the routes and we are posting them on the Instagram to let people know, obviously, we're, you know, where we're going next and, you know, the time scale of what we anticipate. Because we're doing about 4:15 marathons at the moment, so the pace isn't light. You know, we're kind of keeping it down to 5.5 kilometers at the moment, and we're doing really well there. But so we are kind of posting the routes on the Instagram at the moment. Then, so if people want to choose what part they want to join, they're welcome just to pop down and do a couple of K. But obviously, we have to be quite mindful that it's COVID, so it's not really an event, like it's an awareness campaign. So if you are going to come down, you know, you can just kind of jog behind or whatever. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we're just trying to, you know, keep the numbers pretty low because it is COVID and
sure. Let's
keep safe as well, you know, around this. So that's very, very important. But it's been really lovely. Like, we even had some of the heroes this week. They've been getting out themselves and running and sending me videos. You know, it's been great. Like, the community, the kids have really gotten like, man, behind it as well. And I think it's inspired them a little bit too. So, yeah. But like I said, it's kind of, I feel sometimes this is the least I can do because it's the families of Hope in particular that I have such admiration for. I know obviously you speak about me, but realistically, the families and these parents and what they go through on a day-to-day basis and the unconditional love that they show for their children, it's truly phenomenal. And, you know, I think the families and the moms and the dads, the siblings of these kids, it's really, really, truly amazing, like what they do and what they give to their children. It's unconditional. And for most of these families, it's for the rest of their lives. You know, and they really are remarkable parents. So, you know, like I said, I'm in a position where I can get out there and I can run and I can kind of be a voice. You know, at the end of the day, I really truly believe the parents are the true heroes, beyond obviously myself and the kids. It really is the families.
Yeah. Well, you know, good for you and congratulations to you for doing this. And I'm sure everyone's really, really behind you. But I'd also like to ask, what does the future hold for you and for Heroes of Hope? I mean, what's next after the marathons?
Yeah, I think, you know, at this point now, like I said, we are a community outreach initiative. You know, we are pretty much a full-time volunteer program, including myself. Like, I volunteer a lot of my time. Like, obviously, whenever I can, I do try and do a little bit of personal training, try and keep myself going. But realistically, we're looking for to try and sustain it now and try and keep the community together and, if possible, then expand further afield and try and, you know, establish, you know, across the other Emirates as well. I'm sure they obviously won't be as big as Dubai, but definitely try and build some sort of hub or a little Heroes Hope hub, you know, across the Emirates so people can come and talk about their kids and have, the kids can play together. Like any parents want, you know, any family loves to watch their child go and play a football match or watch them in a basketball game. I feel like, you know, kids are terminating that should be the same opportunity for them too. You know, it's great for their families to watch their kid, you know, be with other children or to compete or just be part of something.
Yeah,
you know, it means a lot. And it does, like these little clubs and groups, it does a lot for the family. So ideally, you know, keep trying to sustain this program and then in a position, you know, that we can eventually hopefully expand out across the Emirates and we connect it all together. And that's one thing that we're doing actually this event is instead of collecting medals at the end of every marathon, we're actually collecting jigsaw pieces. So hopefully by day 7, once I've completed it all, we'll put all the jigsaw pieces together to represent the 7 Emirates coming together and hopefully hubs of hope across the nation.
Wonderful. And I mean, you mentioned there about everyone being volunteer. It's a not-for-profit organisation. I mean, I've got to ask, I mean, you need funding. Is that what would be,
absolutely,
would make it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and you know, we've got over like nearly 187 athletes on the register at the moment. Like, so, and we already believe we've got, you know, if we had any, you know, extra support, we could service a lot more, you know, and these volunteers are truly remarkable. I have volunteers all this week even who've given up time at work to come out and help me. You know, they truly do believe in what we do. You know, a lot of the volunteers, like, who've got their own families that they could be, you know, spending time with, they're choosing to come down and help out at the programs. Like, the volunteers are what keeps this program going. Without them, we simply wouldn't have Heroes of Hope. So these people, like, a massive shout out to all the volunteers of this program. They are amazing people, and they come with such genuine, caring, loving, sensational people, and the kids love them. They absolutely love them. Yeah. And it's wonderful to see that as well. Like, and that's what we do call ourselves. We do call ourselves a family of hope, and I think everybody needs family, and thankfully we've been in a position to build that.
Absolutely. And I think now more than ever, as you mentioned, you know, obviously we've had lockdowns. We are restricted, not so much, thankfully. I think we're absolutely so thankful here that we're not so much. But, you know, we still need to come together. We need to have community. We need to have connections with people. We've got a quick clip here from Rami, who was one of our listeners, who had something, a comment for you as well. Let's just play this out now.
I have a 3.5-year-old boy who was diagnosed with abnormal movement when he was 2 years old. He's on medication. He's being weaned off the medication. He has caught up with his peers. His speech is great. But when we went to a school here in Dubai, and we went up with full disclosure of his medical history, we had at least 4 interviews, assessment with the same school, 4 assessment for a 3.5-year-old. They never asked the right questions. Because he was labeled as, you know, he had been previously diagnosed. We've been trying to get him enrolled into that school. Me and my wife figured, let's go to a different school. Actually, we went to 3 different schools. He has been accepted in all 3 schools.
That was Rami there, who called in earlier with his message. I mean, that's fantastic. It's so great to hear that, Rami, that your son has now been accepted, but obviously has gone through a lot of struggles and challenges in order for that to happen. Is that you, is that something that you're definitely seeing in schools? Are those the stories that you may have heard from those parents that you're close to with children?
I think it's mixed experiences, to be honest. I think some families, you know, similar to that man there, they've had, you know, positive results where their child is getting accepted, and there has been other cases where the children are getting accepted but not necessarily getting the right support. So it's very mixed experiences, I think, for a lot of these families. Some families definitely have had fantastic experiences and the kids are doing wonderful. And then for others, it hasn't been the same story. But I think that can happen with anyone. You know, unfortunately, you know, what works for one doesn't always work for the other. Yep. It's just one of those things, I think. But I think definitely the UAE, like I said before, they are definitely promoting inclusion. They're doing whatever they can, you know, within schools and centres to increase the support and ensure that every child has got a place, whether it's in a school, a centre, or wherever it is, you know, for that child to, please God, learn and also obviously integrate into mainstream. So, yeah, I think definitely it's moving in the right direction. So we're proud of the movement and the progress that's been made out here for sure.
Holly, it's been absolutely wonderful to speak to you. You're a great inspiration. Fantastic work, really. Good luck with the rest of your marathon, and
thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Break my leg.
To you. And thanks so much for joining us, taking the time. Really wonderful to talk to you, and just all the best
with
everything.
Thank you for having me. Really
thanks, Holly. All right.
Take care.
That's Holly Murphy there from Heroes of Hope. Check it out if you want to find out more, if you want to volunteer, if you want to get involved, if you want to do some CSR. She needs companies. She needs funding. Heroes of Hope. Do check them out. You can also follow them, I believe, on Instagram or her journey.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good afternoon. Coming up on the programme, I'll be having a chat with an educator, an early years professional and author of children's book, Can I Go Out Now? That's Ebsen Albaiti, coming up next.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
I'd like to welcome now my next guest, Ebtisam Albaiti. Great to have you with us this afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, your book is titled Can I Go Out Now? And it's quite apt for the current climate, I suppose, tackling subjects such as health and environmental issues. I'd like to know, Ebtisam, was it very much inspired by what is happening and has happened in the world due to the pandemic? Or perhaps was the idea already there to begin with to write a book, Ebtisam?
Hi, Siobhan. Thank you so much for having me today. So basically, I'm an educator, and I've always wanted to write a book. And I wrote this book in March 2020. So, yes, it was in line with what was happening. There was with the recent pandemic when everything was closing. And as the title suggests, this was the question that all children and I guess everyone was asking, you know, can I go out now? When can we go out? Mm.
Absolutely, it was. I mean, and thankfully we are in a position here in the UAE where we can go out. But of course, it's something that's very much relevant to children all over the world. It's looking good. It's looking better, particularly in the UK.
But, yes. Yeah.
But as you said, you always wanted to write a book. I mean, they do say that everyone's got a book in them. I don't know if I have,
yes.
To be honest. But was it always a children's book, or was that something that came a bit later? I mean, obviously, you work and you're a teacher, you're an educator. But yes. Was it always a children's book?
So it was always going to be a children's book. Because I'm an educator by profession, a teacher, I've worked in managerial roles as well. So, and I love to read children's book. I mean, till now, I love to read children's book. And I knew it was something that I wanted to achieve in the future. And it was actually one day, it was during last year, one day when I was talking to a good friend of mine, her name is Susan, and I was telling her over the phone, you know what, with everything that's happening right now, maybe now is the time that I can, you know, finally achieve this goal. And there was a strong educational message, which was about the environment and about the pandemic, but shed light, like I shed light in the book on these important concepts.
Mm. Tell us a little bit, though. We've sort of glossed over a little bit about what the book is about. It's about little Earth and who's not feeling very well and misses
yes.
all his little planet friends. Can you, without obviously giving too much away,
yeah.
give us a nice little synopsis of the book itself?
So Little Earth is the protagonist. He's the main character of the book. And he lives with Mummy Moon and Daddy Sun, of course, because they're in the solar system. So one day, Little Earth isn't feeling very well. He isn't feeling well. And actually, his sickness, as to say, is within the environment. And this was something I wanted to touch base on as well. It was his water wasn't blue and his land wasn't green. So basically, throughout the story, as we keep reading, he's watching the other planets playing outside, and he wants to play outside, and this is how I introduced concepts such as social distancing and just staying indoors, and until he feels better, and then finally when the environment does start to heal, Little Earth can finally go outside, which is what he was waiting to do throughout the story. Mm-hmm. And in essence, this is what we're experiencing now, you know, with all the climate change and you know, environmental issues. So I thought it's a great learning tool for schools, for teachers, for parents, you know, in a nice way.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, always great to talk about the environment. Are there messages in there that are takeaway messages for children that they can perhaps add into their life, little habits that they might change in their lives as well from the book?
I mean, everything in the book is implied. Like when I talk about the environment, I don't go deep into one certain concept, such as maybe climate change or pollution. But there are different hints that children can take from it. So, for example, his water isn't blue. So what does that mean? You can interpret it as, is the water not clean? Is it being polluted? And the land not being green? So maybe this will encourage children to gain an interest in planting, you know, so it's everything is implied and they can take away something little, you know, from the story.
Yeah. I mean, it's great, I think, just to encourage that sense of empathy of as well with the earth. I think so often we just take it for granted that we have
yes.
water when we turn on the tap, that, you know, we have food in the fridge, we have all these sorts of things. And
exactly.
I suppose to just reconnect oneself or to understand that we are very much part of the ecosystem that surrounds us. And we have an impact. I think that is one of the most
exactly. We all have a part to play.
Yeah, and of course, when you reach the children, you also reach the adults, because I suppose for the younger ones, the adults will be reading the story, and then I find it myself, which is wonderful, that you know my kids turn the lights off. They will recycle. They are very conscious, and in that,
yes,
I am also. But I think that it's really nice just to get that reminder every now and again from your kids, and it's a great way to encourage that for the whole family.
Yes, for sure.
So this is your first book. Have you got any more in the pipeline?
Yes, this is my first book. And I do have an idea in the pipeline. So very, very soon, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Okay, so can you give us a little sneaky peek? No one's listening, honestly.
Okay, so I'll give you a little sneaky peek. So it may involve Little Earth again,
okay,
but this time tackling something different.
Okay, and did you self-publish, yeah, or did you have your own publisher here?
So being a teacher, being in education, this was so, so, so new to me. So I had the idea, I had this story, and actually when I was writing my book and trying, you know, I had to research, how do I publish, what do I do? So actually my twin sister played the role of creative director. So she had a role to play in this as well. So she helped me try to arrange the not so fun parts. So once I had the story written, once she helped me find my illustrator, once we had all that sorted out, then yes, she reached out to different publishing houses and reached out to different publishers, and we were very fortunate then to get published by Jerboa. And the journey continued.
Oh, that's really wonderful. And how was it working with your sister and your twin sister?
It was our first twin project. This is actually so much fun, and I think because her background is in the creative field, she has all that arty, that's why the illustrations are so amazing. I mean, they really made my story come to life. Yeah. So we worked hand in hand within both our fields. So I had the story, she had the creative side, come together. It was actually really, really nice, yeah, working with her. It was a lot of fun.
Ebdisam, final question for you. We'd just love to know, where can we find this book?
So Can I Go Out Now is currently being sold in all Magrudi's stores and Kinokuniya as well, and can also be ordered online from Magrudi's and Kinokuniya.
Fantastic. We'll definitely get our hands on that. Sounds lovely. And what age group do you think it's for?
So it's ideally for young children, so early years, anything from 2 years up until 6 years old.
Ebdisam, congratulations on your book. We
thank
look
you so much.
Forward to reading the next one in the pipeline, and all the very best to you. Thanks so much. That's Ebdisam Albaiti, who's the author of Can I Go Out Now? She said it's readily available on various different places, so do get your hands on a copy.
Home or Away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm really looking forward to catching up now with our next guest, Emily Jenkins, who's Head of Leisure at Donata Travel. She has got all your latest updates for you. So keep those questions coming in. If you're thinking of flying, if you're thinking of booking flights, you're not sure where you can go to, and you're not sure what the restrictions are, Emily's your lady. She can answer those questions for you. Emily, great to have you on the phone with us today. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me, Siobhan. Yes, I'm great.
Good, good. Now, the last time we spoke, which was a short while ago, you were heading off to Jordan, weren't you? How was your trip?
Yes, I was. It was wonderful. It was really nice, actually, to get a little bit of cooler weather. Not lots of nice sunny skies, but it was nice crisp days, which was good.
I just want to quickly ask you on that. I mean, it's some place where I went some years ago, and it was absolutely wonderful. I'd love to go back. But I did wonder what the weather is like there in the summer, our summer here in the UAE. Is it somewhere that sort of has a roughly maintains its weather, or does it get very, very hot, its climate, I should say?
I think, you know, as always, if you're out in the desert, it's definitely warmer. But one of the wonderful things about Jordan is it's quite diverse. And I know that during the summer months, the Jordanians tend to go down to Aqaba and down to the beaches and the coastline to get a bit more of a breeze, and they also have some beautiful, you know, hills and mountain areas as well, and it can still be really quite green and lush. So yeah, it's definitely warmer, but you know, I think May is one of the peak periods for travellers in Jordan as well. So you know, it's still fairly warm here then. too.
And it's open for travel, which is great news. What was your itinerary? What did your itinerary look like?
Sure. So we spent 7 days there. We covered the capital of Amman, and we also went out to the ancient cities of Jerash and Petra, and then spent a night glamping in Wadi Rum out in the desert, which was wonderful. It was pretty amazing to be in, you know, in some of these most really iconic destinations like Petra when there are, you know, less people around, obviously. So it was a really excellent time to get some unrivaled access to Jordan's famous site. So,
I bet,
you know, it was an influencer's dream from a photo.
You got those great photos. Yeah, because usually, I mean, I said, I think we mentioned this earlier, I went about 20 years ago and there was no one there. It was amazing. But since then, obviously, it is pretty packed. So, yeah, it's probably, if you want to go and see those amazing sites and have them to yourself, now is the time to go, isn't it?
Yeah. So one of the things I would just recommend, so, you know, there is a curfew in place at the moment in Jordan at 7 p.m. in the evenings. As part of our, the way that we booked it, as part of our holiday package, we were accompanied by a local driver guide, you know, that with, you know, private transportation throughout. And he was just absolutely invaluable to have in terms of advice on the local landscape, like where to go for dinner, the best time to do so. You know, they were really supportive in terms of organising all of our visa requirements and pre-arranging all the PCR testing that was required. And it made it so much easier, and it was a really, you know, a big relief to know that someone else had all of that under control, especially, you know, when sometimes you may end up needing to make revisions to your itinerary just to changes and restrictions. So,
yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea. And then can that all be booked through you at Donata?
Yes. So we have a fantastic tour operator that we use on the ground in Jordan who have been in the business for a really long time, and we can help advise on all of that. So, yes.
And in terms of PCR tests, vaccines, what sort of testings do you have to have in place before you go to Jordan?
For Jordan, sure. So you need to test before you depart from Dubai, so within, I think, 72 hours of departure. They do test you on arrival in the airport. And then to come back into Dubai, obviously, you need to have another test in Jordan before you leave.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, we found it really, really simple. It was all booked as part of the package. Mm. So,
well, that's certainly one for the agenda. And I think we'd also spoken about Sri Lanka, because just on that day, I think they announced that Sri Lanka was opening up, but with restrictions. I believe that if you went, you had to have a number of PCR tests, and also you could only stay in certain government hotels. What's the updates on travel to Sri Lanka?
Sure. So Sri Lanka is open for tourists, and there is no minimum number of days that you need to stay there, and there is also no quarantine requirements. In order to stay there as a tourist, they have a list of what they call safe and secure hotels, which have been certified by the Sri Lankan Tourism Development Authority. It's a very comprehensive list, and they are across the island, you know, everywhere from the beaches to the hills to where you need to go. And then in order to then travel, you just need to pre-purchase your PCR test dependent on the number of days you'll stay there. So when you go online to apply for the visa, within that link is where you can pre-purchase the PCR test and also pre-purchase a mandatory COVID-19 insurance cover. So it does sound like a long list of requirements, but it's actually quite simple. And once again, we have a really great partner on the ground in Sri Lanka that we use to make all these arrangements, and they also can assist with all of that. So anything you need, if you just visit Donata Travel, we'll be able to help out with that.
And they pick you up from the airport and then we'll take you to the hotel, etc.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And all the PCR testing is pre-arranged to come to your hotel as well.
Right.
So depending on when you need to get those done.
And how free are you to wander around and go sightseeing once you're actually in the country to leave the hotel?
Yeah, sure. There's not a lot of restrictions on that in terms of getting around. I know that there are a couple of things you just need to keep an eye on in terms of what days of the week certain tourist sites or attractions are open. But apart from that, once you are there, there is yeah, there's no issues or restrictions on where you need to go.
Mm. Okay, well, that's really great news. But it's still, as you said, just to reiterate there, it's only in the government hotels. Like, I know a lot of people used to rent villas and stay in villas, but they're not quite open yet, are they?
No, so that you do need to be in one of the hotels that have been certified by the Development Authority.
Yeah. And then what about Sri Lankan citizens? There's a lot of people working here from Sri Lanka who sadly have not been able to get back to see their families for well over a year now. Any updates on their movement?
Yes, so Sri Lankan citizens can now return home. They do just need to follow a process at the moment where they have to apply for authorisation to return to Sri Lanka from the embassy, the local embassy here. And then when you are booking your airline ticket to go back to Sri Lanka, you just need to send that, share that approval with the airline just to show that that has gone through the system. So, and again, we can help out with all of that, but it's fairly straightforward.
So no quarantine then?
No, not that I... Right. Actually, sorry, I do think that maybe there's a 14-day quarantine for Sri Lankan citizens, but right. I will double-check and I can let you know before the end of the show.
Oh, that would be amazing. Thanks so much. It's like purely my helper at home is Sri Lankan, and I know she's desperate to go back, so I keep trying to find out the answers to these questions. She got very excited when she heard about it, but I'm sure many, many others living here as well are feeling the same way. So thanks so much. It's great to get the latest updates from you, Emily. So moving on a little bit now, I know that, you know, I'm sort of very much looking at the news in the UK who are saying, oh, you know, not really advising people to travel further afield. And I know a lot of people I've spoken to just recently are not looking at a European summer due to various uncertainties about quarantine restrictions and are actually looking further afield to possibly the States. And now we just heard the news about Emirates opening up Orlando. Do you sort of foresee or have you had more interest in from customers wanting to travel further west for the summer?
Yeah, sure. So the US has, you know, we're definitely getting a lot of inquiries about people wanting to travel to the USA over the next, you know, over the summer. The US has differing rules at the moment for quarantine and entry requirements in place by state. So, for example, if you want to go into New York City, I believe there's a 3-day quarantine when you arrive. Whereas when you look at that compared to Florida, at the moment they don't have a quarantine in place. So we were also excited to hear the announcement of the Orlando flight starting with Emirates, I believe, from the 2nd of June. And I think from our side, we'll just continue to assess the entry requirements as we get closer to that date, because, as you know, things are ever changing. So, you know, at this stage, it's looking good. And I think, you know, one of the things we have also seen over the last 12 months is that, you know, if you are looking at booking a summer holiday, most of the airlines and partners that we use are really becoming so much more flexible in terms of their amendment or cancellation fees. So you can, you know, book for that 2nd of June to take the kids to Disney if that's what you want to do. And then as we get closer to the date, you know, we can have a look at how we can, if things do change, that can be adjusted.
Yeah. So we've talked about Jordan. We've talked about Sri Lanka. We are currently, we did discuss the States as well, which you said is really exciting because a number of new destinations are opening up. And I suppose just watch this space. Of course, whatever information that we give you today, we know might change tomorrow. So you have to really always be up to date and just find out before you book your travel. I'm presuming that if you book with Donata, you're the one, you will give travel updates to those people who've booked through you.
Yes, and actually, if you go on donatatravel.com onto our website, there is on the homepage there a where can I travel to guidance. So it's updated daily with all travel updates, guidelines, and also, I guess, inspiration on where you can travel to that's open at the moment.
Yeah, great. So where are some of the other places? I know that Georgia's still up there on the agenda for many. That was a real hotspot, wasn't it, last year and before? Is that still open?
Yes. So Georgia is open for travel for citizens and residents of the UAE. So I actually also went to Georgia a few years ago in wintertime and had an amazing experience up in the mountains of Kazbegi. It is also a great location, even if you want a quick city break to Tbilisi. It's only about a 3.5-hour flight away. And obviously, you know, also for longer stays, if you want to get out to the countryside or go skiing. To get into Georgia at the moment, travellers must have a COVID-19 PCR test result and taken no later than 72 hours prior to arrival in Georgia, or hold a COVID-19 vaccination certificate where you can show that you've had completion of 2 doses.
Right, okay.
So if you haven't had the vaccination, then on your 3rd day after entering Georgia, you do need to have another COVID-19 PCR test.
Mm.
So, if you've been vaccinated, then you don't need the additional test.
Oh, that's interesting. But once you're there, you're not restricted in where you can go?
No, not at all. And, you know, it's such an affordable destination. The food's amazing. There's lots of history to see and the mountains. I know we've got a great offer at the moment to stay at the 5-star Biltmore Hotel in Tbilisi. So you can do 3 nights there in a deluxe room with breakfast and return economy class flights with Fly Dubai, and that's just 2,999 dirhams per person.
Wow, that's good. Yeah. I didn't get to go. You know, I almost booked my flights, and then the pandemic hit and everything, and I just didn't get a chance to go. And I know so many people who've been, and nothing but great comments about it. Absolutely loved it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an awesome country.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's really good to know. I might take a look at that one. Now, where else? News, I think, today or was it yesterday, I was reading about Cyprus. That's another one that's opening up.
Yes, we're very excited about Cyprus opening. So they're opening to travel from the UAE from the 1st of April. So citizens and residents can travel to Cyprus. The UAE has been under their classification as a red country, which I know sounds negative, however it isn't. All it means for entry requirements is that you need to undergo a PCR test 72 hours before your flight departure, and then also an additional PCR test on arrival to Cyprus, which is, I think, 30 euros at the airport, and children under 12 are exempt from that testing on arrival. But again, once you've done those two things and you've registered yourself on the Cyprus Flight Pass platform, then again, you have free movement around the country.
So, and it's interesting, you don't have to wait for the result then, or do they have such technologies that it's an instant result?
No, so, I mean, when we were in Jordan, you had the test on arrival in the airport, and then you were allowed to go straight to your hotel. They were saying, you know, the test results come out within 8 to 12 hours, and they would notify you, and I believe it's a similar system for Cyprus.
So within those 8 to 10 hours, you don't have, do you have to stay in the hotel until you get the results, or can you travel around?
It wasn't enforced. I think it's just more of an expectation.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And have you been to Cyprus yourself?
No, I haven't. It was one of the ones on our list for last year. My husband has been a couple of times and just raved about how beautiful it is in terms of, you know, that real mix of ancient history, beaches, scenic mountains. I think last time he was there, he said that he went up the Troodos Mountains and just loved it. So is it somewhere that you've been?
I have, but many years ago. And I think I went on a press trip. Gosh. It's all quite blurry. I can't remember, but I do remember going. I went, I think, on a family holiday years and years ago, and absolutely loved it. This was probably about 30 years ago, so I'm sure it's changed a lot since then. But I do remember the food being amazing, and I also remember the people being amazing. They were two things that definitely have stayed with me over those years. So I would absolutely go again, for sure. So that's really exciting that's open. Where else? What's up next? To any other places that could be wonderful places for you to travel over the summer?
Sure. So actually the next place that I'm currently trying to convince my husband we should go to in April is the Seychelles Islands, which are now fully open and quarantine free. So that happened on the 25th of March, that it was announced that that it was open to tourists from around the world, and that they had lifted all quarantine requirements. So you still do need to obviously show a negative PCR test upon arrival that has been taken within 72 hours, and you need to have a valid travel health insurance policy that covers, COVID-19. And there's a few forms to fill in online, but otherwise it is a very easy and beautiful place to travel to.
It is. Mm.
Yes.
And what can you do there? What are some of the highlights of a trip to the Seychelles? And have you got any good packages that you have on offer?
Sure. So what I love about the Seychelles, obviously you can go out to some of the other smaller islands, or you can stay on the mainland of Mahé. You know, lots of beautiful water sports. Last time we were in the Seychelles, we also went hiking up in the mountains, which, you know, great, beautiful views. Really lovely to be out in the bush. And also, I'm a huge fan of seafood and going on holiday to eat. So there are some really amazing restaurants and hotels to stay there. So one of the most popular offers we have at the moment actually is a stay at the five-star Constance Ophelia in Mahi, Seychelles. So you can get 3 nights there in a junior suite with breakfast included, return economy class flights with Emirates, and that is 5,820 dirhams per person. Mm-hmm. They also have an offer where the kids can stay free. And you can also upgrade that package to half board, so that's your breakfast and your dinner, from just 595 dirhams per person. So it's one of the most beautiful beaches there on the island of Mahi, and overlooks a really beautiful marine national park. And that it's quite a large property with about, I think, 120 hectares of land with, you know, beautiful vegetation.
Oh, I'm there. We've been talking about Seychelles all week of this prize to go. I just want to go. Yes. I went diving there actually, again, many, many years ago, and it was just spectacular. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I do agree.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. Well, you've got to get convincing your husband to get you across there.
He's got a rubber arm. It's not that hard.
We've got, I'm really conscious of time, Emily. We've got quite a few more questions come through. Let's go to those right now and see if we can get through them. Let's see. So Edelina has a message saying, "Hi there. I would like to ask Emily, does she foresee the travel restrictions for South Africa will be further extended after the 8th of April? So any updates on travelling to and from South Africa?"
So at the moment, there are daily passenger flights to Johannesburg operating. However, outbound passenger services from South Africa back to Dubai are still suspended. At this stage, the update we have from the airlines is that the suspensions are in place until the 8th of April. And unfortunately, we don't have any further information past that date at this stage. So we're just waiting for the next announcement.
Right. OK. Thanks very much for that update. I hope that's been of some help to you, Adelina. So no name on this one, but asking, what's the expectations of Europe opening in summer? Oh, that is a question we all want to know the answer to for travel, as well as taking into account that the EU will roll out a travel certificate prior to the summer vacation that currently excludes the Sinopharm vaccine. Ah, I didn't know that. How will the market overcome that understanding that a substantial amount of the UAE population has taken that vaccine? Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Emily, how would you answer that?
Sure. So I think probably there's two parts to the question. In terms of Europe, there are actually quite a few destinations in Europe that are open and have been open, have been quite popular in the last few months. We've seen, you know, lots of customers travelling to Bosnia, to Russia, both Montenegro and Croatia have been open. And we know that there are obviously the direct flight to Malta begins on the 12th of May from the UAE. Oh. They're also on the green list, as well as, you know, Cyprus, Turkey, etc. So there are, we have got, you know, options. I think in terms of the piece around the vaccine, from what we know, the WHO review of the global vaccine program is ongoing. We understand that many governments across the globe are taking direction from the WHO in terms of vaccine acceptance, but we do expect to see an update in the coming couple of months with specific regards to Sinopharm, which will hopefully answer that question for us.
Yeah, I think everyone's just really anxious and perhaps not knowing what to do. I mean, myself included, really, regarding that. Are there any updates? I think we discussed that a little bit later. The last time I spoke to you as well was about this travel passport. Any further updates on that you can share with us?
You know, not at the moment. We don't have a lot of information on that. I think a lot of it is just very much to do with, you know, testing systems and apps and what, you know, what's going to work, but also getting global acceptance from, you know, multiple governments to be able to try and come up with a system for that. So, but I guess what we're trying to focus on at Dunata Travel is very much the countries that are open for travel at the moment with, you know, fewer barriers in terms of, you know, quarantine rules and entry requirements, And there are a lot more countries, I think, open than we think that there are. And as I said earlier, if you just jump on to danatatravel.com, there is a piece there that, that just says, where can I travel to from the UAE, and has all of those guidelines on what's open, what's easy to travel to, and what's not currently open for tourists.
I mean, that's just a fantastic site, I think, for anyone just to hop onto and take a look at. You're absolutely right. I'm curious, though, sort of last few minutes with you, Emily, about any sort of upcoming trends or trends in travel. And have you seen any? I mean, I know that especially here, people are, you know, enjoying the great outdoors. Hatter's incredible these days. Everyone's going walking in the mountains. Camping is massive these days. Are you? Is that a trend now for people to perhaps go on more possible adventure holidays, and, you know, not necessarily go and follow the previous trends of where everyone else used to go, but maybe looking for something a little bit off the beaten track, maybe doing wellness holidays or just something a bit different?
Yeah, sure. I think the interesting thing for us is we conducted a survey late last year with a lot of thousands of UAE travellers, and actually 44% of people said that the first trip they would plan would be to go home to see friends and family. Obviously, I think a lot of us are really keen on that. But actually, what we have seen is that what people are prioritising is trust and understanding around health and safety measures from airlines and hotels, flexible cancellation policies. Those are very much what people are asking for when you're looking at how they're booking their holidays.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual holiday styles, I think, beach breaks, outdoor adventure holidays and island escapes were what our customers have voted as being the top. And you can very much see that in our data, as you can see that, you know, staycations out to Ras Al Khaimah and Fujairah have been, you know, like hugely popular this year, as well as, you know, Maldives, Zanzibar and now the Seychelles. So I do think the other thing is that, you know, this year has been, you know, tough for so many people. And I think not being able to travel to places, maybe, you know, people have reviewed that bucket list and had a look and thought, you know, if I haven't travelled anywhere for 12 months, where have I always wanted to go to? So, you know, I do think we'll see, a lot of those really big, big ticket item bucket list holidays being ticked off.
Right. Always great to talk to you. You're an inspiration, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
Book those tickets. Happy holidays to you. And thanks very much for sharing all that wonderful information with us. Have a great afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Emily Jenkins there, Head of Leisure at Danata Travel. Thanks for all the updates.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the trusted expert in nutrition for your cat and dog.
Hello, welcome to Dr. Leanne Cameron from the British Veterinary Hospital. How are you today?
Hello, Siobhan. I'm good, thank you. Just about got finished up a busy day this morning in the clinic. So, it's always cool. The joys of vet life, you don't know what's coming in the door next.
No.
So it just doesn't look too busy from the start of the day, and then it gets very busy. So I'm glad to be sitting chatting to you now, for sure.
Great to have you on. We've got so many questions for you already. They're coming through. I mentioned earlier that apparently it's Active Dog Month and Canine Fitness Month, as I understand. That's in April, isn't it? So we're going to be focusing a little bit on how to keep your pooch fit and healthy, and also about grooming. Loads to discuss. Where should we start? Let's talk a little bit about activities for your pooch. Now, I'm presuming, obviously, different breeds need different activities. If you're a big dog or a small dog, you're going to obviously want less or more activities. But how do you know how much walking exercise your dog should have? I mean, what is there sort of a rule of thumb there, Leanne?
Yeah, of course. Well, you sort of discussed it there just before, is that, you know, each dog is individual, each dog breed is individual, and it will depend on dog size, on the genetic makeup of a dog, and lots of general fitness age of the dog as well. All of these things mean that exercise has to be tailored specifically to their needs. So obviously in majority of cases, we're generally getting our People that now get dogs, especially after lockdown, actually, when people were starting to get to have more time for animals, they were actually doing much more research about what animal would fit best into their life. And a lot of that would have been based on, how much will I be able to exercise my job with my dog with my job commitments? Are we living in a flat? Are we living in a villa? All these things in general. So obviously, small dogs are very popular in apartments, etc. Because although they're smaller, they don't need as much physical exercise a day. So we usually say for these smaller dogs, sort of 20 minutes to half an hour twice a day, kind of general ambulatory walking. A lot of the times the chihuahua will dictate how fast it walks by itself, so you have to go with that. Whereas the bigger dogs, like the Labradors and some of the higher energy breeds, even the poodle crosses, which are very popular now as well. I have one myself, Cockapoo. He is absolutely crazy, and if I don't walk him 45 minutes twice a day, he essentially just needs that kind of physical burning energy for sure. So there's definitely those different needs.
I've just recently got a puppy as well. Well, 5 months now, and I was told that a sort of rule of thumb, you can calculate 5 minutes 5 minutes for exercise per month of your dog. Is that sort of a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, well, that's good advice when it comes to puppies, because the worry is that we use that rule because sometimes puppies in general do have very high energy for very short periods of time, and people think, oh gosh, I need to take my, 3-month-old pup. There's so much energy here. I need to burn so that it stops eating my floors and eating my curtains. I'm going to take it out for a 45-minute walk. But what is very important is that in that time, all that energy needs to be put towards growth. And if we walk them too much, too soon, and have those joints, except for moving, we can end up with growth abnormalities as we go forward. So yes, that's where the kind of things. Now, if you start going 5 minutes per month and you work that out for it, that's a lot of calculation for a five-year-old dog type thing. But definitely in that first year, 5 minutes per month works really well, and that's a good kind of starter, just so that we're not actually
over-exercising.
Our dogs are growing.
I mean, there were many stories, weren't there, in the news probably earlier in the year, and certainly during lockdowns, where people were over-exercising their dogs. These poor dogs had never been had so much exercise in their lives because people were not at work and they had more time to exercise. So, not enough exercise is probably just as bad as too much exercise.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think the reason why we have sort of active pet month in kind of April is because it's kind of at now we can all feel the kind of change of the weather from, the nice cool where we can pretty much walk our dogs, up until a couple of weeks ago, we can walk them at any time of the day. So actually, it's quite easy to fit in a longer dog walk around our lives. But it's just important to emphasize the importance of kind of going into the summer. I have a lot of clients come in and just sort of accept it as a, oh, it's just because it's over the summer and we don't get to do much exercise. That's why he's put on that kilo. But in fact, that kilo in terms of percentage body weight is equivalent of about us putting on 8 to 10 kilos.
So,
and that makes a big difference in terms of your. It's the same with people in terms of heart disease, the joints, all of those things that diabetes, all of those things just with a kilo can matter. And the one thing as well is it's very difficult to then, especially in middle-aged dogs, to get that kilo back off. So it's just very important to develop a plan for coming into the winter months now. Now, granted, it is harder, but there's lots of options in terms of being able to keep your dog exercised, both physically and mentally as well, which is a very important thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, not just sort of mindless walking the streets, but I suppose just playing, retrieving, fetching, doing puzzles. I mean, someone had mentioned that they had a puzzle mat or something.
One of my dog's favorite games is a cheese hunt. So before we, if we're going out during the day for a couple of hours, he's obsessed with like little blocks of cheddar cheese, and we put little bits of cheese all around the house upstairs and downstairs, and he sniffs it out. That's him. Honestly, he's like nose down to the floor and away he goes.
Oh, that's like such a great idea.
It's really good now. I've actually trained him to find my toddler in the garden, so it's quite good. Good for teaching them to use their nose, for sure. So as I say, that kind of active stimulation, that can tire them out. About 15 minutes of active stimulation, something like that, and you can get all these fancy puzzle things where they have to move it with their nose and their paws and things like retrieving things and finding things. In 10 minutes of that can be as much stimulation as a 30 to 40 minute physical walk as well. So it is very important to develop those, especially with the height of the heat in the daytime, for sure. Yes.
Well, let's get back to that, actually, because that's a really important question about walking dogs or pets during the summer weather. But I'd like to go to some of these messages because we're loads coming through now. So let's tackle some of these that have come through. Let's see. My cat is scheduled for neutering next week, but she's on heat now. How to deal with this? By the way, her name is Cindy Laughter. Great name.
Love
Cindy
it.
Laughter.
Yeah.
Love it.
Amazing.
So what would you say to them?
Yeah, so in general, it's a bit different with cats and dogs whenever they're in heat. When dogs are in heat, there's a lot of blood supply and often a big uterus that we like to try in terms of making the surgery easier. We like to sort of do it 2 months after heat. So if a dog falls into heat about a week before she's ready to be spayed, we often delay it. In cats, it's a bit different because they're induced ovulators, which essentially means that they can go into heat numerous times and kind of per month, essentially. And often it can be very dramatic and quite stressful for the cat as well. They can lose weight, etc. We are more than happy to proceed ahead and do the operation. The uterus changes slightly in terms of its texture and what it looks like, but the surgery isn't by any means any more difficult or anything like that. So, of course, I would definitely recommend that the vet examines her in the morning before the surgery, just to make sure that everything is, she's well in herself and she hasn't lost too much weight or anything like that. But in general, 95% of the time we go ahead and spay her regardless.
Okay. Great. Yep. Thank you so much for that. Let's see where we are. Mary Chris, I'm just concerned about my indoor cat. They went to the park 2 days ago and after that she had frequent sneezes and it seems like she's got a cold or something. Is it possible that she got the flu from the park? She wants to know if she should go to visit the vet if it persists, or also if there's any maybe some home remedies that you would recommend.
Yeah, of course. So any sort of sneezing, we assume it with sort of in the same way as when we get a sort of upper airway cold, we definitely associate it with upper airway inflammation as opposed to anything lower down in the lungs. Of course, cat, even being an indoor cat, you can essentially, they can sniff up the wrong things. And if you've got a lot of plants and things around, you can sniff little bits of plant material. We took out some seeds from a dog's nose the other day. So there's definitely lots of little things that can get up
really?
In there.
Wow.
But yeah, the idea of potentially picking up the flu is definitely potential. Unfortunately, in the Dubai stray population, we do have a lot of cat flu viruses floating around. So it is always possible. That's why we always emphasise the importance of still having vaccinations for these flu for a lot of these flu viruses, even if they're only indoor cats, because we can bring in the virus on our feet from either kind of discharge from that cat that you've accidentally stood on it, etc. But certainly, as I say, if your cat is still eating and it's only an occasional sneeze, then there's no issues with monitoring it. And what can help actually to clear the airways a little bit is some steaming. So actually when you go in for a kind of warm bath into the bathroom or in for a shower, you close the door and keep the window closed and bring your cat in as a little companion, the actual steam from the warm room can actually help clear some of that mucus, etc. But like anything, obviously if they start to go off, if she starts to go off her food or has persistent sneezing, then I definitely recommend that we go to the vet. Because like everything, a lot of these cat flu sniffling sneezes start with viruses, which obviously in a lot of ways it is kind of management of it, but a lot of the times it can develop bacteria, can jump on board and you can get a bacterial infection.
Okay.
So sometimes you do need some antibiotics.
Right. Okay. Great. Thanks so much for that. So, Dr. Leanne, let's go through to some more of these questions. No name on this one, but oh yes, actually, Junaid. Hi, Junaid. He says he's got three Havanese dogs, age 3, 4, and 5, and his question is about the garden fertilizer. Oh, this is a really interesting one, actually. He says, "Are there any safe options available? Usually, our gardener uses NPK nitrogen potassium in summer, and I know it's not safe for our dogs. What do you suggest if the lawn is fertilised, and how long should we keep our dogs away from the lawn?" Great question. What would you say, Dr. Leanne?
Yeah, so in general, obviously, there are hundreds and thousands of different fertilisers that are used. But in general, is what we say is that we, ones that are non-organic, we say to keep them, the dog pets off them for 24 hours and at least to have had one watering. Because the thing about fertilisers is they're made to very quickly be absorbed into the ground. So once they've been absorbed into the ground, they don't have those kind of upsets and essentially the toxic causes that we worry about with our pets. So at least 24 hours. Some of them, as I say, you do need kind of 48 hours with a couple of waterings at least. But certainly it's something where obviously we're very privileged here, a lot of us, to have our gardeners. And the main thing is to just make sure that you clarify, the gardeners let you know, especially with your dogs, whenever that is happening. But, you know, it's not like you need to put the dogs into boarding for a week because of the fertilizer. Once it's been absorbed into the ground, unless you have an excessive digging dog, then the chances that the concentration at that point is very, very limited, and the sort of minimal things that we get are sort of irritations in the paws. And as I say, if they do ingest a lot of it, they can get sort of gastric upset.
But I'm sure, I've spent quite a lot of time at the garden centre trying to find sort of organic fertilisers for growing stuff. I mean, there are quite a lot out there, I think, that could be a possible alternative, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the main thing is, as I say, is just to make sure you've done your research. And a lot of them now, essentially, they know that there's so many pets around, so they make sure that they are kind of lower concentrations but still effective fertilisers, essentially, so that we're not in a situation. Because not only is it for dogs, but it's for kind of, you know, we have so much, you know, even our geckos and our lizards and all of those things, you know, they don't want to end up having, you know, huge kills of them that can affect those as well. Yeah. So certainly they're much safer, much lower concentrations now with the fertilisers.
Another question come through. I feed stray cats from our residence parking area. These cats love to rub their bodies on my legs, but I sometimes worry they are unhealthy. Can I transmit it to my pet Cindy because of this and make her sick?
So the main thing that we, obviously cats, it sounds like they, the stray cats are very appreciative of you feeding them if they're rubbing them up and down. That's a sort of a sense of endearment from a cat, so that's quite sweet. But yes, unfortunately, as I sort of briefly talked about earlier, our stray population has quite a few diseases. And I think the main one that I would be worried about is a skin problem called ringworm. And certainly if ringworm is the type of organism that's in the environment everywhere. And a lot of stray cats can have it. And if they're rubbing up against you and then you bring some of the spores of that ringworm into your environment and your cat either has is a little bit immune suppressed, so is undergoing a little bit of a mild infection, or has a little break in the skin for any sort of reason, you know, could have scratched itself, essentially, then there is risk of that. So certainly what I would be encouraging is to have, essentially a pair of longer trousers or pants or something that she uses specifically for feeding the cats, and then remove it before she goes into the house.
We've had one question come in from Sam. My cat Lucky, I used to have a cat called Lucky, snores while sleeping. Is this normal? Otherwise, she seems to be enjoying the sleep. A snoring cat, Leanne.
Yeah, in general, we don't worry too much about snoring cats, but in the same way as kind of in people, the snorers are usually the slightly larger men or ladies with a little bit excess weight around their ribs, etc. So certainly as long as your cat is within a good weight range and a good body condition score, then We don't worry too much about it. Often flat-faced breeds, because they have less of a nose and a longer soft palate, they can be more prone to making more noise as they sleep. So again, would be a reason, but just make sure that the weight is of optimum to limit. But other than that, as long as it's not, you know, like sleep apnea where she's snoring continually and waking herself up, it's nothing to worry about. Just leave her to have a good sleep for sure.
Can cats get sleep apnea?
Well, they can, in the same way as if they have an elongated loss, long palates, soft palates, because of a lot of these smush breeds, then essentially what happens is as they relax, the soft palate falls over the windpipe, and therefore it will wake them up, because obviously they're sort of struggling, they've got more of that resistance to breathe. So, it certainly you see it in those snub breeds for sure.
Right. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on the programme. We've always got so many questions come through. I had loads more questions as well for you. We'll have to squish them in next time we have you on, but it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. Dr. Leanne Cameron, veterinary surgeon from the British Veterinary Clinic. Thanks very much.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the animal before the owner.
Coming up next, we're talking about paws on grass. What is it? Well, there's thousands of people living here in apartment buildings who have pets. And that's how a pet owner from Toronto who moved to Dubai came up with an idea to sell patches of grass as pee pads and play areas. They can be put, they can put these patches on their balconies or anywhere they would like in their apartment. And here is Bilal Wasi. He told us about that eureka moment.
My sister had just moved here from Canada, and she was used to using grass for her apartment. And that's something that we don't have in UAE. Here, the only option is you can either buy artificial grass or have pee pads or live in a villa or a townhouse which has a backyard. So majority of UAE does live in like vertical housing. And as you know, it's very hard to get grass installed in a balcony. So that's where we thought of the idea. Initially, my sister was just buying patches of grass and putting it in her balcony and then, you know, renewing it after every few weeks or so. But it was a hassle for her, obviously. So that's where the idea came from. So initially, I started buying grass and testing out at my home and seeing how long it lasts, how we should keep it, whether it should be in a box, whether it should be in a plastic container. So our first idea was to use it as a natural piece, which will just sit in the patio, which was a bit of a mess. So then we invested in getting boxes, and then we realized that that's the best way to do it. So at this time, we still weren't live yet. And what happened was COVID started in like March of last year. And at that time, I actually lost my job. So that was a bit of a blow, but it actually pushed me more into starting this business like full time. So I immediately put together all of my research, got some help from friends and family, put a website together, and I started my business. And that's pretty much how the business came into UAE.
It's an amazing story. So Bilal lost his job, and that was the push he needed to go ahead and start his business. Next, I wanted to find out, how long is the patch of grass? How big is it? And are there different sizes?
There's actually four sizes now. There's small, medium, large, and extra large. The small is 60 by 50 centimeters. The medium is basically two boxes, mm-hmm. large is three boxes, and extra large is four boxes. So we have some customers who have like two medium-sized dogs. So for them, the extra large is a very good option because they have four boxes right on the side of their patio, and they can use it. The dogs have a bigger area to use it. For other customers, like for customers with smaller dogs, they usually prefer to get the small patch, which is still not that small. It's 60 by 50 centimeters. So it is a very good size for them.
So it starts from about 70 dirhams, but I wanted to also learn about the environmental aspect of it. And we love the term poggers. What are the boxes made of? Here's Bilal with the answer.
So our boxes are completely eco-friendly. We make it with cardboard. The grass is obviously eco-friendly. So we recommend for customers to literally just throw it away in their garbage chute because it is not going to cause any issues to the environment whatsoever. And we initially were planning on putting brochures or putting like plastic gloves into the boxes, but then we realized that since we are an eco-friendly product, let's just stay away from that. Mm. Everything, like all of our marketing, all of our tips, everything is digital. So we send across WhatsApp messages with all of the tips. We have a complete area on our Instagram page in our highlights, which brings you different tips. Use the POGs. So we call our grass POGs, and the dogs who use it are poggers.
I really love that term, poggers. How long does a patch of grass last?
So the grass lasts up to 1 to 2 weeks. Some customers who are very good at taking care of it, they manage to make it last for up to a month. But wow. We recommend, just for the hygienic reasons, to get it replaced on a weekly or a bi-weekly subscription. You also have the option to buy a one-time trial. We usually recommend any new customer to initially buy it as a trial, just so they can see if their dog can get used to it, if they're able to train him properly or her properly to use it in the right way. We have had issues in the past where some dogs just aren't trained in the right way to use grass patch inside their home. So they tend to dig it up or they tend to pull it out. There is a certain type of training which is involved in having your dog to use it as a pee pad.
So this is really good for dogs who live in high-rise apartments and can't go out for health reasons.
Yes, exactly. That is something that has came up many times, where we have had elder dogs or dogs who just had a surgery done. Like, it's not feasible for them to go downstairs. And even if you think of it as a human, right, we humans, like, if you have a broken leg, we will not be going for a walk to the park. So it's the same for a dog. And especially with the heat that comes in the way during summertime, the paw of the dog actually gets very hot. Mm-hmm. So we do recommend, like, if you are taking your dog to the park ever, which you should be, if it's feasible for the dog itself, but you should be checking the dog's paws to see if it is safe for them to be walking on the concrete. And if not, then of course there's paws on grass for you.
Bilal Wasi there talking to us about paws on grass. He's the entrepreneur all the way behind it. They sell patches of real grass for pets who live in apartment buildings. A great and very entrepreneurial concept there, and also could be very handy for this summer when it gets too hot to go out.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And remember, you can listen to all the Dubai Eye podcasts on our website or wherever you might get your podcasts. Afternoons with Helen Farmer is live weekdays from 2 till 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.